tugboat with the single shipping container, of a type usually seen stacked on far larger vessels, that perches solidly but somewhat awkwardly astern. Unlike the boat, with its dented hull and profusion of antennae and railings, the box strapped on deck has the stripped-down gleam of contemporary high design. A striated block in a very pale blue, its side is emblazoned with a purple spot on which, in turn, floats an orange shape outlined in pink, a squared cross of the kind that symbolizes humanitarian and medical aid turned into a boat and sent to sea. Of course, as that emblem already suggests, this is no sculpture, not really. It's the vessel of one of the most audacious and controversial instances of feminist activism in recent memory. In 1999, a Dutch physician named Rebecca Gompertz formed an NGO called Women on Waves. The group turned a shipping container into a fully functional gynecological clinic, and in 2001 began strapping it to rented ships and sailing it to countries that criminalize abortion. Their plan, to dock, take aboard local women, and sail them 12 miles out to sea. 12 miles, because that, in most cases, is the limit of territorial waters. 12 miles out, the ship's doctors could offer all the advice and treatment available in a liberal nation like the Netherlands, including abortion. For it is Dutch law that obtains on a ship registered in the Netherlands afloat in international waters. So far, boats bearing the clinic have embarked for Ireland, Poland, and Portugal, bringing the Netherlands to the shores, or at least to 12 miles from the shores, of countries where abortion, information on abortion, and even contraception is difficult to access. To Gompertz and Women on Waves, abortion is a human rights issue, and their project is powered by its urgency. UN studies make it clear that criminalizing abortion does not eliminate or even radically reduce its rates. What it does do is increase unsafe abortion. Every year, in what writers in the medical journal The Lancet have just called the preventable pandemic, more than 68,000 women die of these unsafe procedures, and most of them are poor women who can't afford quality illegal care or so-called abortion tourism to more liberal nations. But no statistic gives a better sense of what is at stake for Women on Waves than the stories told by the women who called its hotline during each of its voyages. Like the Polish woman who couldn't afford the next day's meals for the two children she had already and who had been jumping off furniture to try to induce a miscarriage. Or the woman, still bleeding as she talked on the phone, who had taken an unknown drug in an attempt to self-abort and whose doctor would only offer to sew shut her cervix to stop the miscarriage. And then there are the women who simply left messages like this one. You are my last chance to live as I've planned. I'm still counting on you. Help me, please, I'm desperate. Women on Waves responds with a fully functional medical clinic, two MDs and a nurse, an almost entirely female ship's crew, and networks of local volunteers, all backed by years of planning and legal research. In port, it offers legal and medical workshops, sex education and contraception. On the way out to sea, it gives ultrasounds and counseling. And in international waters, it provides the abortion pill to women who want it. Controversial enough to earn its doctors and volunteers not only bombardment with eggs and paint, but legal cases and even death threats. Radical enough in its challenge to national sovereignty to move the Portuguese government to launch warships to protect its populace from this feminist invasion, Women on Waves has spurred debate on abortion law where it hadn't occurred for years. Its visits galvanized the local groups of activists who invited Women on Waves to each country, and more such pro-choice groups were formed in its wake. A Polish government survey in 2003 found that popular support for liberalizing abortion law had gone up 12% in a year and cited the Women on Waves visit that summer as a possible source of that change. Meanwhile, the media has swarmed to a project that is as photogenic as it is controversial, allowing Women on Waves to raise awareness and spark debate worldwide. So we could talk all day, I think, about this extraordinary instance of feminist activism. And yet this conference offers an opportunity to mark something about Women on Waves that very few reports on the project have noted, that it is also a remarkable case of the intersection of activism and art. For Women on Waves is moored to the artistic in a surprising number of ways. Start with the act of radical imagination at the core of the project, the idea that the dominion of one state over the bodies of its women could be evaded by a short trip on a ship registered in another. Outrageous in its simplicity as well as its implications. You know, what's next? Cannabis cruises, euthanasia yachts. The idea of using international waters as a refuge for women's rights in particular, unfurls into a poetic series of associations. It literalizes the metaphor of waves, of course, that we use to describe generations of feminism, but it links it to old images that associate dangerous female power and the sea, from sirens and mermaids to the female pirates, Anne Bonny and Mary Read, while it takes on the traditional associations of women and ships, always called she. I'm even told that in the 18th century, shipwrecks were called miscarriages. But you don't have to take this interpretive journey of mine to discover what Women on Waves calls the art side of activism. You need only know that the shipping container clinic was designed by the Dutch artist Joop van Lieshout, who dubbed it the A-Portable, and that his design was made public in a show at the Witte de Wit Center for Contemporary Art in Rotterdam. It might help to know that while in port, Women on Waves holds workshops on its ships, not only for lawyers and doctors, but for artists and writers, or that it has been featured in exhibitions like Uta Meta Bauer's Women Building in Portugal, and in a dedicated show at the Mediamatic Art Space in Amsterdam. You may recall seeing it featured in Art Forum or listed by Claire Bishop among examples of new political art. And if you were in Venice in the summer of 2001 and noticed a strange blue box afloat on a raft, you also know that the portable abortion clinic was represented at that year's Venice Biennale. In short, art institutions have been remarkably willing to accept and support this particular activist project. And this activist project has been remarkably interested in using art to enable and extend its mission. In 2003, Gomperts and the Dutch artist and critic Willem Veldhoven began exhibiting a series of installations that in part document the abortion boat trips. Here, for instance, the voices of women who called the boat's hotline in 2001 play over images of the sea. But the installations go beyond documentation, using the language and spaces of contemporary art to promote the project's vision of a normalized and safe abortion policy for all women. This one symbolically links the dangers of unsafe abortion to the need to destigmatize the procedure and nods at once to Man Ray, pro-choice imagery, and the history of open letters, like the famous 1971 French Manifesto of the 343, in which prominent women have fought stigmatization by publicly proclaiming, "I had an abortion." As it turns out, at the same time she was in medical school, and before the stint as a doctor for Greenpeace, during which she came up with the idea for Women on Waves, the remarkable Rebecca Gomperts completed a four-year art degree at Amsterdam's Rijksveld Academy, studying conceptual art. And while she no longer identifies as an artist, it was, in a very literal way, art that allowed her to put her idea into practice. The grant that provided the bulk of the money to construct the portable abortion clinic came not from the Dutch Health Ministry or the World Health Organization, not from NARAL or Feminist Majority, it came from the Mondrian Foundation. Given all this, it's not difficult to imagine an argument for Women on Waves as art, specifically to slip it into the category of activist art that has been used since it began to be theorized by critics like Lucie Lepard in the 1980s to hold open a space for fusions of work that is symbolic and work that is social. No doubt it's the viability of activist art as a category that has allowed so many art organizations and institutions to support this project. Yet, I'm not really interested in arguing that Women on Waves is art, of even this special kind. In fact, I fear that the category of activist art, as important as it has been for legitimating, theorizing, and promoting politically engaged practice, now somewhat obscures the nature of many of the most productive and provocative practices at the crossing of its two terms. Projects that do not hybridize art and activism so much as they tactically play on their ambiguous separation, something to which the mismatch of ship and container might be said to give visual form. Women on Waves is not art, nor is it not art. Rather, it tacks between art and politics in much the same way it moves between actual human rights mission and media political campaign, legality and piracy, fact and myth. To me, there's still no more moving statement of faith in the revolutionary force of imagination than the one on the streets of Paris during the uprisings of 1968, under the cobblestones, the beach. 12 miles from the beach, the Netherlands, Women on Waves might respond. For the project is driven by a similar determination to replace what is with what could be. Instead of the 60s vision of liberation, however, it imagines something concrete, a world in which women have the option of safe and legal abortion no matter where they live. And instead of symbolically promoting change, the project's method is to make it so, to use maritime law and the concept of international waters to actually create, however temporarily and provisionally, the dreamed of situation. This performative quality was noted in 2001 by critic Jennifer Allen. The project does not thematize, represent, nor illustrate the problem of abortion, she wrote. It imposes a new geopolitical reality that challenges the status quo in ways that cannot be fathomed, let alone controlled. In this, Women on Waves makes an interesting comparison, I think, with another, perhaps better known group at the crossing of art and activism. The quasi-anonymous group, the Yes Men, create brilliantly but sometimes very subtly parodic websites and press releases to expose the politics of entities like the World Trade Organization, George Bush, or McDonald's. So subtle are the parodies, in fact, that unsuspecting event planners sometimes use the coordinates provided in them to contact the organizations in question. And in this way, the Yes Men have scored official invitations to events like last year's Catastrophic Loss Conference, which is the title of an actual conference. Staying completely in character, they then strive to illustrate the real values of the organizations that they pretend to represent, usually by unveiling an innovative prototype, such as the Survivaball that Halliburton recently debuted, much to its surprise. A watertight, inflatable, multimedia-equipped suit designed to prepare executives to capitalize on the new business opportunities that catastrophic climate change will surely provide. But the Yes Men also use their strategies to more serious effect, most notoriously in 2004, when they convinced BBC News that Dow Chemical, in a change of corporate heart, was offering compensation to the victims of the ongoing disaster caused by its subsidiary, Union Carbide, whose poorly maintained facility leaked poison gas into the town of Bhopal, India, in 1984. The news that Dow had finally decided to take the ethical high ground, stockholders be damned, news which was completely untrue, but convincingly presented, left Dow in the position of having to explain anew that it was not giving aid, and brought a deluge of media attention both to the anniversary of the disaster and the company's unwillingness to take responsibility for it. From one perspective, the opposition between the mischievous, hoaxing Yes Men and the legalistic, earnest Women on Waves is as complete as that between the genders in their names, as clear as the difference between real and virtual, between campaigns and hijinks. For while Gompertz insists on actually producing the condition of legal abortion that her project conjures in imagination, the Yes Men's strategy of impersonation means that they always operate in what J.L. Austin called the unhappy performative. A statement like Dow accepts responsibility is similar to one like I christen this ship. Both do something rather than represent something. Such speech acts are not judged true or untrue but successful or unsuccessful, felicitous or infelicitous. For instance, if I say I christen this ship the Anne Bonnie, but do so while acting in a play, its name does not actually change, and my performative would be termed unhappy. In neither of these cases was the project's vision of safe legal abortion actually achieved. And yet, this doesn't mean that the project failed. Far from it. For while Gompertz is nothing if not sincere, and while saving even one woman from an unsafe abortion is authentically heroic, it's clear that the project has always been meant to do media politics and to raise legal challenges, as well as, or perhaps by means of, its medical service. Indeed, its brilliance is in recognizing the special power of doing both at once, of using bodily care to do representational work. For while it is often said that politics is the art of the possible, where the yes men and women on waves meet is in developing an art of the plausible. It is always possible that Dow will have a change of heart. What the yes men did is make us, for a moment, believe it had happened. And this politics, or even aesthetics, of plausibility is also the function of the handful of abortion pills that Women on Waves has actually managed to dispense. Very real, they are also make-believe, in the sense that they make us believe that women's rights can be established everywhere. It seems fitting in this regard that the mobile abortion clinic exhibited at the Venice Biennale was, to put it bluntly, fake. Because the actual clinic was shipping out to Ireland at the time, it was an empty replica that floated at the Arsenale. No one could actually make their way out to the raft to verify what was in the blue container. And perhaps because of this, it functioned as a screen for projection of some kind, with the rumor somehow developing that the clinic could be visited, but only by women seeking gynecological care. Like reports that have Women on Waves preparing journeys to Africa and Latin America and performing surgical procedures on the high seas, such stories are fictions. But of course, the lesson of the Yes Men and of Women on Waves is that fictions can be facts of another order. The imagined interventions in the Global South suggest an important dimension of the project's politics, as we'll see in a moment. But so too, this idea that there might be abortion consults on offer at the Venice Biennale highlights a truth, that a model of art as literal functional service had been legitimated by the most august of artistic institutions. The category of activist art starts from such a belief, that the aesthetic is not a retreat from the real, but is in and of it. It's peculiar, then, that in many recent crossings of art and activism, the idea of art's imbrication in the world meets a precisely opposing model of art's autonomy from it. Consider the case of the Austrian collective Wochenklausur, which uses art exhibitions as opportunities to develop creative forms of civic service. In 1995, the group took on the problem of Austria's strict and quota-driven immigration law and managed to provide 7 refugees legal residency in the country by getting them new professional identities as artists, an employment category for which there was no quota. The move recalls the attitude of Joop van Lieshout, the Dutch artist who designed the Women on Waves clinic, but whose own practice has culminated in the founding of his own city, complete with sex chamber, drug-making facility, and munitions plant, reworking the idea of art's autonomy in a separatist and maybe even survivalist mode. Jennifer Allen paraphrases him this way: since the state usually respects the autonomy of aesthetics, why not use art to take over the world? Wochenklausur might not put it quite that way, but they too trade on the fact that art's special status leaves it less regulated than other forms of employment or production. Forms such as seafaring, for example, which is precisely what occurred to Gompertz and her crew in a moment of crisis during the abortion boat's pilot mission. Almost immediately upon setting sail for Ireland, they were radioed from their Dutch port to stop and unload the shipping container, because adding a medical clinic to the ship had voided its inspection certificate. Thinking quickly, Women on Waves explained to the officials that the container was not a medical facility, but a work of art. Calls were made and documents faxed to confirm the artistic pedigree, and the boat was allowed to continue to Ireland. If I started this talk considering the abortion boat a kind of activist assemblage, Women on Waves here does the same. As opposed to the activist art model of expanding art's reach to include action in the world, here art is tactically configured or reconfigured as a space apart, a not quite real and thus somewhat extra legal sphere that provides activism a safe harbor. We want to eat our cake and have it too, those of us who believe in a political and activist art. We don't accept that art is an apolitical space apart, and yet we want it to be a zone of special freedom. This is either an embarrassing lapse or, as Jacques Rancière would suggest, a structuring paradox for political art practice today. According to Rancière, there is a constant tension in modernity between, quote, between the logic of art that becomes life at the price of abolishing itself as art and the logic of art that does politics on the explicit condition of not doing it at all. Wolkenklausur and Women on Waves are fascinating because they embody both sides of the paradox, opening art to real action in the world, but doing so precisely by using art and thus constructing it as a space apart. Indeed, one of the striking things about Women on Waves is the parallel between the boat that provides temporary escape from a nation's law and the art world as a space where normal regulations don't quite apply. This suggests one final aspect of the art and politics of Women on Waves. Critics have been quick to identify the colonialist undertones of the project's central image, a Dutch ship sailing to foreign lands to promote social and cultural change. It took an anti-abortion Dutch health minister to accuse Women on Waves of treating Poland like a banana republic, but even the staunchest pro-choice partisan may find the symbolism disturbing. It can be countered that Women on Waves comes to a country at the invitation of local pro-choice groups, and that to provide an option is not the same as to enforce an ideology or take possession of a territory. But the real weakness of the colonialist critique is that it mislabels the project's starting assumption that invasion, occupation, and enforcement are not necessary when invitation, transportation, and provision of options will do instead. And this is to say that the project's political unconscious may be not colonialist, but neoliberal. The correspondence may be imprecise, but there is an uncomfortable rhyme, isn't there, between the strategic retreat to international waters to escape local laws and the offshoring by which corporations evade taxes and national law. Isn't the hallmark of our current form of economic organization precisely the ability to shake off regulation, as in the concept of the free trade zone, where in a model strikingly reminiscent of the strategy of Women on Waves, bits of land are freed from the regulation of the countries to which they belong, as if they were set afloat themselves? And isn't there something very much of our time about the realization that for maximum flexibility and efficiency, an abortion clinic could be housed in a shipping container, that steel box, so indispensable to the post-war reorientation of trade we call globalization, that Alan Sekula calls it the very coffin of remote labor power? We might say that Gompert's project makes use of old maritime law, but participates in a new model of power. Let me be clear, to recognize such a parallel is not to call the women who have risked their safety and freedom in this attempt to better the lives of their sisters neo-imperialists by any means. If anything, they might be said to wear the forms of economic globalization, from container shipping to legal loopholes, the way that pranksters wear corporate suits, using the dominant system to their own progressive ends. Nevertheless, it seems to me that while Women on Waves works on the politics of reproductive rights, it works in the politics of globalization. This may be neither here nor there when it comes to assessing Women on Waves as an activist project. But as a para-aesthetic one, it seems crucial to note. For the underlying logic of the otherwise regulated space links not only free trade zone and abortion boat, but the sphere of art as well. Thank you.